Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and with me today is Brian Randall. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Robert. How you doing, buddy?
I've been trying to get you on the show for well over a year, and you are finally here.
Yeah, I have issues. I come up here because up here in the lovely Seattle area, and I'm always working. And this is actually going to be fun, so it's it always just doesn't work out.
You're too busy for my little show, apparently.
No.
Today, you're here.
I love you, Robert. You know that.
Excellent. So the reason I asked Brian on, Brian is with MCW Technologies. He's a well-known trainer, speaker, expert on many subjects, including ALM.
Yep.
And the reason you're here, virtualization.
Yeah, virtualization to me is something that every developer needs to know about, and really to the point that as computing evolves like it's going through, it's important to almost the average user.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where you're not sure how to get started, so you know, oh, I should be doing this, but you don't know what to do, and so you don't do it, and then the next time you have a need, oh, I should really do that, but I don't know how, and then when you finally learn how, you kick yourself for not having mastered this years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing, too, is people have a tendency to have tried it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you tried it on Macs. Macs were one of the first consumer-level things where people did because they wanted to run Windows, but Mac had a different architecture. And so they had an experience where they go, oh, that's horrible. Or they did it with the first releases on Windows, and it was not great. This is not your father's virtualization.
Yes. So one of the many great things about Windows 8, we could do a whole week on that. But one of the many great things about Windows 8 is it has much better virtualization.
Yeah.
Hyper-V built in the box, ships with the product. And so it's now easier than ever to start taking advantage of virtualization.
Yeah.
Correct?
Exactly. Windows 7 did have the ability to do some virtualization, but it was an add-on. It wasn't as integrated. And it was one of those things that wasn't ready for prime time relative to the way it is in Windows 8 in the sense that this is built in, it's matured, it's based on rock-solid server technology, and you have compatibility across the two, and so it's a much better way to get started.
Right. So what we're going to do is we're going to address a couple scenarios. So scenario number one, I've moved to Windows 8, I'm loving Windows 8, but I need to be able to build and test solutions on Windows 7, or potentially run them on XP.
Yep.
I don't have multiple machines laying around. Or another scenario, there's new stuff that has appeared. There's a new CTP of Visual Studio 2012 Update 2, or the next version of Windows is out in consumer preview or release preview or developer preview or whatever.
What are the previews called?
I mean, it's not, but let's assume that it is.
Right.
And I want to play with that. But again, I'm not going to nuke my current shipping solid environment. I don't have a second laptop to put this on. I don't want to put it on my old laptop that wasn't even good for doing the things that it was doing then. So what do I do?
Well, the first thing you need to do is have a Windows 8 ready machine. Let's be honest.
Okay.
Modern hardware is going to be a requirement for a couple things. At the end of the day, number one requirement is that it has a processor that has built-in virtualization capabilities, and then there's a special thing called SLAT, which at the end of the day is about giving you great video performance. I mean, there's a lot of technical detail on the web you can find in developers, search, your architects, email me if you want. But the point is, you have to have that technology. Now you may be asking, well, how do I know, Brian? Well, first of all, if it's a Windows 8 machine, it's got that logo on it, it's almost always good. The key, though, it has to be a full Windows 8, so not Windows RT. So it has to be an Intel-based, AMD-based processor machine. If you have a modern Core i7, i5 from Intel, so Ivy Bridge, no problem. Even the previous generation is fine. But you might be wondering, well, what about my current machine? There's two things. You have to look at the BIOS, and of course, I won't be switching to my BIOS. But what you can do from the command prompt is go download a tool, and it's called Core Info. And it's from every developer's favorite geek, Mark Rosanovich, a technical fellow here at Microsoft. You download this little command line tool and run it, and there's a bunch of things you can get. But notice there's this option for hypervisor. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also other things in here. And the key is all you have to do is run it with the -V switch right here. So dump only virtualization-related features. This will first of all tell you if it's even already turned on. And the other thing is, if you don't have it, it'll tell if your machine is turned on to support it.
Okay.
The good news is Windows 8 is pretty smart. I installed it yesterday on a new Lenovo Touch laptop, a X1 Carbon Touch.
Okay.
It was turned off in the BIOS. Hyper-V would not install and told me it was turned off in the firmware. So they've done a lot of work to really make it. So it's only occasionally run to a machine that you can't figure out from Windows that you can't run Hyper-V. It'll really tell you. Now, assuming you have the right hardware, then it's simply an issue of going to the control panel, and you come in here to your programs and features right here. Mm-hmm. Once you go in here, turn Windows features on or off, and you'll note that there is a Hyper-V option right there.
Which was previously available only in Server.
Correct. In Windows, starting with Windows Server 2008,
yep.
That was the first release of Hyper-V, and then 2000, and of course in 2012.
Yes.
Now, the two things
and
here.
Now in Windows 8 Pro.
Pro and Enterprise.
Pro and Enterprise.
Yes. Good. That was a good qualification. Yeah, Pro and Enterprise. And the key things is Hyper-V platform means you can run VMs. Management tools means you can manage them on Windows 8 boxes in a domain or a server machine in a domain. Workgroups requires a little extra work, but the point is that's just the GUI tools. Mm-hmm. The point is, on my other Lenovo, because it was turned off in the BIOS, this was unavailable. And it just told me you got it enabled in the firmware.
Okay.
So, of course, I have it installed. Otherwise, we would have to install and then do a reboot. But once you're ready to go there, then you run what's called the Hyper-V Manager. Now, you'll notice I have a lot of virtual machines. I love this stuff. There's no kidding. I do this every day. And so you'll note I've got a bunch of Win8 virtual machines. In fact, actually, all these are. But you could do a Windows 7 one. So would you like me to show you maybe how you create a new VM really quick?
Yeah.
All right. So step one, you just come over here to Machine, say New, Virtual Machine. Get a wizard. And step one, what do you want to call this? So we'll call this Windows 7 for Robert. And then you can control where you want it. The default is on your C drive, and I'm not a big fan of that. So what I do is I have a place on one of my other drives in this computer, and it's specifically for my Hyper-V VMs. Okay?
Okay.
And the HV is Hyper-V, 530 is the machine, and then as F is what drive letter. Just help me remember where I put stuff. Next, how much memory do you want to start? Lots of flexibility here, in particular because we have something called dynamic memory. Dynamic memory means with the right operating system, most notably modern ones like Windows 7 and above on the client, you can say, you know what, I want to start at 512 megs, but if I need more, give me more up to a certain amount.
Okay?
And that's this little checkbox right here. Otherwise, you can say, I just want a fixed amount. Now, for Windows 7, it runs good in 512, so I'll just start with there, no problem. Next, networking.
So back up a sec.
Sure, absolutely.
So you've said 512, so does that mean when this machine's running, it's taking up 512 of what you have on your computer?
Absolutely.
And if you gave it 8 gigs and you've got 8 gigs on your computer, does that mean there's nothing left for your computer?
It will not let you do that. There's actually a reserve in the system, and it monitors. So for example, this laptop actually has 32 gigs of RAM. So if we come over here to performance and memory, you'll notice it says 32, but I'm using 13% already.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's try and do 32 gigs.
Okay.
All right. So 3, 2, 7, 6, 8. And notice what happened. Out of bounds.
Okay.
They looked at my system, and based upon my current system, I can only use right around 28 gigs.
It also said so above that.
Oh, it even says there. There you go. Well, it's a dialogue with more than three words.
Don't read the manual. Wait for the error message.
Exactly.
Like a true developer.
Anyway, I did it to myself. I always joke about three words on a dialogue, click OK.
Yes.
All right, but yes, it won't let you over allocate. And that's key.
That's
it doesn't.
Two words, by the way. Click OK.
No, there's more three words. Moving right along. In either case, yeah, it won't let you oversubscribe.
Okay.
It also will stop you. You know, I have a bunch of VMs here. I cannot start them all because if I did, it wants, you know, a terabyte of RAM or whatever it is.
So you'll need to be aware of how much memory you're divvying up on the system and, you know, what you're doing. If you're just using that virtual machine, you're going to start it, spend all your time in there, and then shut it down, you could just give it, you know, most of what you have.
Absolutely.
If you're going to bounce back and forth, you might need to juggle.
Exactly. Particularly if you're going to run more than one virtual machine versus one. So a lot of times if I'm testing a new release of Visual Studio, that has an update or something, mm-hmm. I will give it a lot of RAM, maybe as much as 16 gig.
Right.
But I'm going to spend a few hours in it. I'm writing in a lab. I'm testing new features. Other times, if I'm doing testing, I often try and emulate what I know my customers are going to use, the people that are using what I'm writing. And so I will go as low as I think is reasonable, and usually that's, for Windows 8, a gig to 2 gigs.
Right.
With Visual Studio, I will test 32-bit or 64-bit, by the way, which is, you can do both here. That's another big win over Windows 7. We now have 64-bit support for virtual machines. And I will try those environments as close to what I think is reasonable for the customer.
So you can create a Windows 8 virtual machine on Windows 8, give that virtual machine a gig or 2 gigs of RAM,
yep.
Develop on your main machine, and then go test the app in a low memory scenario by creating a virtual machine.
Absolutely.
Another great scenario.
Yeah, and you can do bitness. I'm running 64-bit,
bitness.
Obviously.
Oh, okay.
64-bit operating system.
Yep.
On the other hand, I know customers are running 32-bit, and we've talked about this, Windows XP 32-bit,
mm-hmm.
Windows 7 32-bit, yep. And then, of course, 64-bit. You get that test matrix that's really flexible. It's really important for developers. We're not trying to make you testers, but we're trying to have you be able to deliver quality software sooner so it doesn't come back at you. And by doing some of these basic tests, especially when you do some fringe cases, virtualization is just yeah. awesome for that.
Can you create a Windows RT VM?
No.
Okay.
The way virtualization works today with Hyper-V in particular, but also some other products out there on the internet, is that they emulate things like your network driver. In other words, they present a standardized network driver no matter mm-hmm. which operating system and no matter what your host network card is. For example, I have Wi-Fi and built-in, and they're two different types. Okay. The processor, however, is one thing that is virtualized through. Whatever the processor is on
Got
this
it.
Machine is
okay.
what you will see
right.
inside the virtual machine.
Okay.
So we don't support ARM today.
Okay, cool.
So we hit next, we'll take the default. And the next thing is networking. Networking
yes.
is somewhat of a persnickety problem for a lot of us. So let's be clear about one thing about a virtual machine. As far as networking and a lot of things we do, it's a computer on your network just like the host, just like the laptop. In fact, we use the term host for the physical machine and guest for all the virtual machines. They need to be appropriately protected for antivirus if you're going to expose them to the public internet.
Mm-hmm.
You have to treat them like a real machine. They have to be patched. And when it comes to networking, if you can't get two machines to generally connect on the network normally, the VM's not going to magically do
sure.
it by default. And let me explain. When you click down for a connection here, depending upon how you define your virtual machine, you can have more than one connection. So I have three. Wired represents the hardware that's plugged in here.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi, pretty straightforward. And then I have something called internal. Hyper-V supports specialized networking that allows you to create bridges between VMs themselves. So it lets you create what's known as a completely private network.
Okay.
So only the VMs can talk to each other, which is great for isolation testing. Or you can do an internal, which says the VM can talk to the host, and the host can talk to the VM, but they can't talk to the internet or the external network.
So which combo was that?
That's internal.
That's internal. Okay.
Right. Internal says the host can talk to you and vice versa, but mm-hmm. not outside. And then there's actually a fourth option.
So if you select internal,
mm-hmm.
you're saying that the virtual machine will not be able to get out on the web.
That is correct.
I see.
But I can talk to it on the host.
Okay.
You can also say not at all.
So you can do intranet all day long, but you cannot do internet.
Well, it's not even intranet. It's machine network.
Well, the equivalent of internet. I'm talking to another machine on
only
the
this
network.
Machine. No. Only this machine. Only the host.
But you've created a network. You've created a network
between
the host and the guest.
Yes.
So the guest can talk to a server on the network,
no.
which is the host. No?
No.
What am I missing?
Okay. So we have one machine here. What if I had another real machine here too?
Okay.
On a real network, intranet, they could all talk to each other.
Yes.
When I go to internal, the VM now can only talk to this machine, the physical one, and the host can only talk to it. But the VM cannot see this machine when it's on an internal network.
Okay.
And if there's private, only VMs can talk to each other. The host doesn't even talk to it.
Okay.
And I'll show you, you're going, well, if you can't talk to the network, how are you going to connect it and do things? I'll show you that. So let's start with the straightforward approach, which mostly people want is, I want to be able to get to the internet, do Windows Update, and do things.
Yep.
Okay. And then finally, the last thing is...
Oh, yeah. Most people, when you ask people, what do you need internet access for, they pretty much always say Windows Update is the first thing.
You know, I'm not judging what people do with their machines, whether they shop at work, they're social networking, or anything else.
Or maybe, you know, reading email or, you know...
Oh, yeah, there's
like
the other kind of stuff,
okay.
yeah. All right, you know, line of business apps, right, could be another thing that you need
exactly.
to use.
Okay.
The next thing is, where am I going to put all this stuff?
Yes. And
virtual,
how big is it going to be?
You got it. So first of all, notice the maximum there.
Okay.
So first of all, we're creating a file that's going to reside on my physical hard drive that represents a hard drive to the virtual machine. It's known as a VHD or VHDX. The key is, VHDs were the original version of the file format that's backwards compatible mm-hmm. with older versions of virtualization. But if you're only doing Windows 8 and or Server 2012, VHDX, which is the new default, okay. is better because it's more fault tolerant, it handles performance, and it supports larger virtual files. Okay. You'll note, though, there's size here. And once again, this is where we can get into a lot of esotericness. But basically, in general, especially if you're starting with a VHDX, just start with what you think is reasonable.
So where did it come up with 127?
It had to do with, that's the old default highest number. And if you do a VHD, it's still compatible.
Okay.
With some of the older versions of virtual PC that people have done on clients.
Okay.
And then you can change that, of course. What I usually do is say, like, for Windows, and I'm going to put, say, Visual Studio in it and Office and stuff, I'll start with 32.
32. So that's going to be Windows and Visual Studio and Office and all that.
And leave
32
me
32 gig.
And let me enough room to do, because remember, I'm okay. testing.
Right.
The reason is sometimes I'm going to make these fixed disks because maybe I want better performance, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'm trying to eke every bit out. And when you expand it, it's going to expand as large as the maximum. Mm-hmm. So if I say 64 terabytes, well, I don't have that anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
The thing is, with the modern versions, you can always make it bigger. It's okay. easy, right. ridiculous. Okay. So I don't really generally stress on that. And like I said, I sometimes also take these and do different tricks with them. And so I generally just am conservative because I can always make them bigger. Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing is, if you have a VHD already, you can pick it, of course. And you can say, I'm going to do it later.
Okay.
Okay. But we'll just say, you know what? We'll do it now. I'll do it 32. The name is implied. You can change that next. And now the question is, well, what do you want to do? Install the operating system later. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting if you want to do configuration later, which is what I'm going to pick. However, if you're happy with the defaults, you can say install from a CD or DVD, which I don't have one. Mm-hmm. But what do most of us do now? We download ISOs.
Right.
And so I could pick that and then browse to an image file, an ISO file. Okay? You can also install, believe it or not, from a virtual floppy disk.
Okay, awesome.
And if you think about some really old operating systems, mm-hmm. That was the way they did it. Or you can even do install an operating system from a network-based installation server, which is awesome here at Microsoft. You guys have these great RIS servers, and I'm sure the Windows team has changed the name, but there's these Windows deployment servers
right.
that will let you just press a key and install, and you can also do that from a VM. So once again, it's like a real machine.
So a lot of, if you went to the Windows site to get developer preview or consumer preview or release preview, usually you got an .exe, which then downloaded the bits over off the web, right?
Yep.
So you can't specify that here, right? You literally need to go get the ISO. There's probably a menu choice there somewhere for it. Certainly, if you have MSDN, you can get it.
Right. Now, for the ones, if you don't get an ISO, unfortunately, you'll have to make an ISO. Is the easiest way to do it. There's other weird ways around this, but in mm-hmm. general, making ISO is easiest. Unfortunately, it's not built into Windows directly. You can do it with the command line tools in the Windows SDK. So some of you geeks out there, I know, have that, so no problem. But maybe you want to help a friend out. You're not in the mood to download the SDK and install it and figure out the command line syntax. There are a number of free tools. IMG Burn is one out there that's well-trusted. I use it all the time.
Okay.
Boom. It's good. Magic ISO is another commercial product, so you can buy it, you can use it, whatever. But once again, if you have MSDN, which hopefully you do as a developer because that's how you live
right.
here, you just pick it from the ISO.
Okay?
So we'll do later because I'm going to show you then, I want to tweak a couple things. All right? Next, finish. Now it's going to go through and create it, and notice the disk created really quick. I mean, it was
right.
done. That's because it's what's called a dynamic expanding drive. It has started really small. So if we scroll down here, Windows 7 for Robert, and go to settings, we can control and fine-tune the way things work. Number one, memory. We now can go in and just say, oh, I changed my mind. I don't just want half a gig. I want a full gigabyte. Okay? I can also enable dynamic memory and adjust the values. Now here it says, start at 512. And give me up to the maximum whatever Hyper-V can give me based upon the way the machine's running. And then there's a buffer. You can also control memory weight, which means this VM is more important than another VM. Once again, the defaults work really good, and I generally just use them. But the geeks out there, you want to tweak knobs and play with things, party on. So once again, I'm going to go to fixed. Now, the next thing is processors. Previous versions only supported up to 4.
Okay.
Here, whatever you have available. I have up to 8 because I have an 8-core machine. Hmm. Okay. And notice as I go down, notice percent of total system resources. Okay. Now, it does let you do odd, but as a programmer, that just offends my sensibility. So we'll just do 4 cores or 4 virtual processors. There's our virtual hard drive, which is living out here. And watch if I go over here and browse to this file. Notice it's only 4 KB.
Yep.
All right. That's because as we add data, it's going to expand.
Okay.
Now, the downside of that it's a little slower. By the way, it's not that much slower, but it is a little slower because it's having to grab disk blocks as it needs to write them. So sometimes we'll make them fixed. The other thing is fixed is really good if the VM is important to you and you don't want to ever run out of disk space. You'll know it always has space to expand.
Okay.
So if I had done 32 and made it fixed, which unfortunately you have to do outside the wizard, it would allocate that space. You'd have to wait for it to make the file big enough. So like a terabyte VHDX, just you know, takes a little while to generate.
So if you make it fixed, you can increase the size later or you can't?
You can. Fixed or dynamic, you can both make bigger. And you do this by going to edit. And you can do things like compact, dynamic, convert and expand. Right. And it lets you change that stuff. All right. Lots of great options there. And once again, I was a little upset we didn't get this in Windows 7, but I'd rather had the more complete version that we got here, in all honesty, because it's much richer. You can add also additional VHDXs. So if you want to have one that's data, which is really convenient, sometimes you just want to store your data and be able to pull it away for different OSs. You can
add a hard drive, basically.
Yep. Come over here.
Okay.
You come over here to
that machine. Can you share that hard drive?
Absolutely. If it's a data drive, absolutely.
So you could create 3 virtual machines that are all using that data drive?
Yes, not concurrently.
Right. Okay. That's fair enough.
Right.
Okay.
And there's other. Once again, I can go into lots of really bizarre tricks, but you can do some things with diff drives and sharing things, etc.
We'll stick to the basics. For
right.
Now.
But yeah, you can definitely add a drive and then share between 3 of them. Like have your data on, and they all see it. There's IDE drives. There's SCSI drives. The biggest thing about SCSI drives, why we like them over IDE, is you can hot add them to modern versions of Windows and the VM. So let's say you decide later you want it. You don't have to shut down the VM to add it. Cool. So that's nice. Whereas IDEs, you can't, and you have to have IDE for your boot drive.
Okay.
And that's the default. Once again, you come here and tweak your network adapter, and there's some other if you're a network geek, VLAN tagging, bandwidth management, you can do offloading, and hardware acceleration features. I mean, all sorts of great stuff here. Mm-hmm. Control MAC addresses. So once again, this is not your father's virtualization, folks. You got to really give it a chance. And there's even more in the server version. And then, COM ports, if you need to do it, there's some, you're doing specialized debugging, et cetera, you can do that, diskette drives. And the last thing I want to point out here is integration services. To give you the best experience, modern versions of Windows have these special features in the operating system that let them know they're a VM and to make the VM run better. One is, for example, operating system shutdown. So I can right-click from outside of the management console and tell it to shut down, and it'll tell Windows to do that for me.
Right.
Time synchronization. Because of the intricacies of virtualization, VMs over time will lose their clock from the hardware clock. Mm. And so, because they're virtualized. And so what happens is the host will tell it, hey, update your time. For domain controllers or in environments where you're syncing with some other time source, you can turn this off. Data exchange, this is a more low-level thing, but there's ways for the VM to get data from the host and vice versa, and that can be used by management tools, et cetera, as well as programmers. Heartbeat, is the VM still alive? And then backup. So modern versions of Windows support something called VSS for snapshotting and capturing file changes on open files. Hyper-V supports that. So if you have a VSS-aware snapshotting or backup tool, a good example is Microsoft's Data Protection Manager product. It can back up your running VMs like it backs up running hosts.
Cool.
So those are some things. In general, we always use them on. The best part is in Windows 8, they're baked in. So I don't have to do anything to get that support. Now, in the case of Windows 7, especially Windows 7 pre-SP1, it doesn't know anything about this version of Hyper-V. So what happens is, after you install the OS, you install these integration services, and that gives you support for this.
Okay.
Excuse me. Okay, so we're really close except for one thing. I need an OS.
Yes.
So I've got a big hard drive here just in case, but I've also got an internal where I keep a lot of my ISO files. So let's go to Image File. Browse, and we'll go over here to my ISO directory. And, well, look at this. I actually had this for a customer the other day. Okay. Windows XP. I got that from my Amazon subscription. So let's scroll down here a bit. And, well, sadly, we might actually have to go old school and do an XP install just for fun. But I apologize. I could have swore I had Windows 7 here.
Well, that's okay. It should work the same.
Well, let's just do XP. Let's just prove a point. We can go old school. In fact, we'll just dump this down to two virtual processors. Gig of RAM, XP's not going to know what to do with itself. And we'll do that. Right-click, and I'm going to rename because I don't want to say that. I want to say Windows XP for Robert. So flexibility. Mm-hmm. And now let's start it up. Now, if I start it, though, how am I going to connect and work with it, right? Now, one of the things with virtual machines, I said it's like a real machine, right? You would connect it over the network. Well, I need to see the video screen. So it turns out when you're on the host, they have a thing called VM Connect, which is like RDP, except when it, you know, the guys that write the software are going to correct me. Well, there's all these technical details. The bottom line is it behaves like RDP, mm-hmm. except it connects not to the standard RDP port. It connects to what's called the VM bus. And the bottom line is it's the software and the hypervisor, the technology that makes Hyper-V work, that lets you connect to the video card, the virtual video card in the machine.
Okay.
So what you're going to see is I'm going to click connect. It's going to be turned off. And I'm going to power it on. Give it a second. And we will get...
running setup. So now it is going to run the setup as of updated as of the time you created the ISO, which means you'll then have to spend hours and hours and hours downloading updates. Is there a way of installing it? It's a leading question because I know the answer is yes. But is there a way of installing it, updating it, and then saying this is my new starting point?
Absolutely.
Saving that in the future as a new starting point.
Absolutely.
Cool.
So the couple ways you can do this, folks, by the way, is for people that are more IT professionals, there are tools that help you do this. But even developers should know the basics, which is this. Number one, you create it, and you know you're just going to keep using it later and later, but you don't use it one at a time. You're not going to make it a domain. It's not a domain controller. Mm-hmm. You're not going to install it in your IT network and make it a production machine. It's for development and test, right? So you don't care about some possible little weirdnesses. I'll just save it, save that VHDX out, mm-hmm. make a copy when you
make
want to use
copy.
It.
Right. So you create a version called Windows XP clean as of today's date.
You got it.
Or whatever.
Right. And I do this all the time. And I'll do Windows updates. I'll do this stuff. And I'll save it off.
And then you save those.
Right. Now let
you
me.
You don't overwrite them.
Saving's important.
And you remember to stop and then not add Office to it.
Exactly. So you do
not that I've ever done that.
No, never. So you do that, and then once again, the lazy approach, or the I'm not worried about doing it for production or for real, okay, is that you just copy and then boot it up, rename it if you want to ever run them mm-hmm. at the same time. Obviously, you domain join them, you can't do that. There's some stuff there. But the other thing is, if you want to do it the right way, and there's reasons too, you just need to learn a little bit about sysprep. The good thing in new modern versions of Windows, it's much easier. And it's built in. XP, it's a lot more difficult. They've made it better. Windows 8, it's built in. Windows 7, built in.
What is sysprep? Why do you use it?
Sysprep is part of the technology family that Microsoft created for OEMs. In other words, it lets you configure the machine correctly and then remove all the unique user data, machine data, removes the SID, and then puts it into you can put it into mode that's called out-of-box experience, which is like when you first boot up Windows. The difference is it'll be patched to that point you're at. Mm-hmm. It'll remember all the things you put on there. You can even put lots of software in. Visual Studio is sysprep aware.
Right.
Office is sysprep aware. And then what happens is the big important reason for this is then when you bring it up, you can join it to domain. You can use it as a secondary production machine.
Right.
And know you've done all the right rules. And Microsoft supports that, whereas they won't support if you told, oh, I copied the VHD 15 times and renamed it and tried to join it to my domain.
Okay.
So that's there. Once again, a little more IT pro-ish, but worth spending some time learning. So this is going to take a couple seconds. While this runs, I've got enough memory and processors. I'm going to minimize. Let's go to another VM. In fact, let me show you a great thing I love about virtualization.
Okay.
Robert and I have done work over the years together, and one of the things we've built a lot of is hands-on labs, right? And I've been working on some hands-on labs, and you'll notice I've got this machine up here, and it's Windows 8 Enterprise Eval, January 2012 with VS 2012 QU1. So mm-hmm. I want to make sure I knew exactly what's in here. And then you notice this thing on here called snapshots. So what I did is I got the base way I wanted. It was just the operating system, Visual Studio, clean. And I had a number of labs I'm working on testing. Mm-hmm. And The thing is, one, for example, needed a preview release of Office, or not a preview release, needed Office, but also needed a preview release of the SharePoint and Office tools.
Okay.
Because they're previews, I didn't want them affecting the other things, because we know we're not going to ship the lab on the preview, right? We're going to have to test on the final, but we got work to do. In addition, I have a REST lab, and I also have a Web Forms lab. And what happens is, I'm able to move between these different states within one machine. So I don't have to keep 4 and 5 copies of the machine. I can have it at different points in time and move easily between them. And you notice here, what happened? I got blocked. But the good thing is, I can come back to that same point in time by just jumping to this snapshot. And the other thing is, notice, you can save it. You know how you suspend your laptop? I can do it with a VM. So watch, this will just come up in 2 seconds. So start. And it's live. I can connect. And just like you would with a real machine, it's going to log me in. And notice Visual Studio's still there. And I'm ready to go.
Hmm. So go back to the snapshots.
Yep.
Those are not... the main size of the VHD is,
let's just
throw out a number.
Let's just say it's 24 gig.
Okay, so each of those snapshots is not 24 gig.
Nope.
Each of those snapshots is simply, what, the difference is basically diffing, and then it's smart enough to restore the state?
Yes. So the way it works is, the minute you start using snapshots, mm-hmm. it creates what's known as a snapshot diff drive, or an AVHDX, I think is the file extension. And what happens is all the writes go to that snapshot file, but they read appropriately, and this is the magic of virtualization, they read from the host VHDX and then read write to the snapshot. And then they know how to make up the chain and move them in and out.
So it's, instead of source code control, it's system control.
It is.
This is the way of thinking of it, right?
Exactly. It gives you time machine capability. As you go back in time as well as move forward. And in fact, if we go to settings, one of the things that will happen is you'll notice it won't let me change the drive information, where it's stored or anything, because I'm active, right? And I've got all these snapshots. But if we notice that's on my F drive, so let's just go look at that real quick. We can look at some of the size, what it's costing me to have that. Now, they're not necessarily super cheap. You can quickly get multi-gigabyte snapshots.
Disk space is cheap these days.
Disk space is cheap, right? This I've got almost half a terabyte here. We come down here, and notice the directories that I'm pretty compulsive about by naming. And if we go to snapshots, what we see here is these are small XML config files, but if I go in these directories, actually the snapshots themselves will be over here. And if we take a look, why is my size? Oh, it's hidden. There we go. So there's the main one, which is 25 gig.
Okay.
2 gig, 3 gig, 4, then 8.
Okay.
So they vary. Depends on how long you use them, what you do. The bigger ones, for example, I will put money that the 8 gig one is when I installed Office.
Okay,
installed Office, which caused a lot of I/O. And it's not going to be equal to necessarily exactly what you wrote in total storage because it causes churn and expansions, et cetera. And that's why these big external 4 terabyte drives are great for this kind of stuff if you need them for backups.
So we're on the subject of going up buying, and you've got a Seagate 4 terabyte drive.
Mm-hmm.
Are these things pretty reliable these days?
Oh yeah, they're very, but I'm paranoid, so, and they're so cheap, buy two. Or if you don't want to do 4, buy 2 twos.
And then do you back them up?
That's how I back them up. I make duplicate copies.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the tape, forget it, even DVDs and stuff, it's cheaper to buy these.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you go to your favorite online retailer, you go to your favorite big box, whatever, 4 terabytes now is usually, on average, $169. You look at 2 terabytes, definitely under 100, as little as 89. Now, this is a bigger one that's 4 terabytes, and while it's a little faster because it's full size,
mm-hmm.
you want one to throw in your safety deposit box, right? You know, because let's be honest, time is money, right? So you spend this time getting a couple of good base VMs, go get one of those portable ones. I mean, I always see, like, you know, Best Buy in my local area, you know, and go get, you know, 500 gigs for $69, mm-hmm. right? Go buy one, wake up Sunday morning, pop it in there, copy it. When you get into work on Monday morning, back it up and throw in your safe deposit.
So is it worth paying more for brand names and higher prices? I mean, so for example, are these like HDMI cables, which it turns out there's no need to ever pay $20 for an HDMI cable because they're all the same and $1.50 is as good as $20?
So
is it the same thing with these external drives?
Today, my commoditized drive is Seagate's. For the large ones, and here's the fun thing. Guess what? For the smaller bus-powered ones, Western Digital.
Okay.
Hitachi, I had tried Hitachi. They just didn't do anything for me one or another. No emotional thing. Mm-hmm. I've had good luck on these for performance, so I've been using them. Okay. And then I do use a lot of Lacy. Lacy is more specialized. They have these larger cube drives. They also support other interfaces that are interesting. For example, I still use eSATA a lot. This is USB 3 only, or USB 2 compatible.
Okay.
So that my choices. I do stick to mainstream, though. There are some more off-brand, particularly the mini drives. I don't use those. And like I said, the price point anymore, you're not going to save a lot. The other thing about Seagate drives and some of the other drives, these are mostly about quick backups. This is consumer grade. If you're thinking about servers and stuff, there's enterprise hard drives. That's right. A whole other game.
Okay.
By the way, if we take a quick look, Windows XP is now, you know, asking me for the GUI and stuff.
Yep.
So I can come over here. Next. Okay. Oh, wow. I need a product key.
No doubt.
Well, you know what? We're going to come back to this. And so what I'm going to do here is
Well, it's not an opportunity to just pirate software.
No, it is not.
I mean, that's not why we, you know.
But something. I don't think we want to go put my real key up here. Let me show you that. You're saying, well, okay, what if I want to just try virtualization? I don't have Windows XP. And maybe you don't even want to have to create the VHD and do the install. It turns out if you go to the Microsoft public site, you can evaluate Windows Server 2012. Mm-hmm. And if you scroll down here, notice you can download ISOs, but you can also download the VHD.
And of course, Brian Keller has provided VHDs for the ALM, his labs, and the Team Foundation server stuff for quite some time. Those are very, very popular, and he keeps those updated.
Yeah, he keeps those updated. Mm-hmm. I worked with Brian. We just released one that is for the ALM stuff that also shows off some System Center features that was just released. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're looking to test a specific scenario, do a little searching on the Microsoft site. Don't go out on the random internet. Microsoft has specific rules about VHDs with pre-installed software. Do not download from any other sites. Only from Microsoft property. Right. And you will find things like this, which means this is just clean Windows, nothing else. They have the VHD Evaluation Center that might have Exchange. Mm-hmm. Some of the other product teams do them. So there are ways to try out some of the major products without even doing the install yourself. It's download. Boot it up, agree to the license,
and there have also
good.
Occasionally been VHDs on MSDN. Your MSDN subscription has occasionally
they've done some
VHD,
special
right?
specialized Sometimes, ones.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Okay.
So this one I've already downloaded. In fact, it's on. I've stored it on this external Seagate drive. And if we come down here, I've got some backups. But right here, server eval. And you'll notice that I've done some, just like we talked about. Mm-hmm. I made some copies. I made a fixed version. I made a dynamic version. And notice these are sys-prepped. Right, so I can use them over and over again. And then I've got the download. So the download is about 2.5 gigs. Mm-hmm. And once you expand it, you get a VHD. And then I also converted one to VHDX.
Okay.
So I can take any one of these. And in fact, we'll do that right now. And we're going to put that in the same directory where I was doing the Windows XP one. And we'll just use that configuration. So I'm just going to copy this. And I love this. Just the geek in me just loves what they did here with the user interface in Windows 8, right? I'm going to get this copy percentage to show me how it's doing and coming back through this. So we'll let this copy over. We'll get this booted up and finish it up. But if we come back over here to this Windows 8 one, you know, if I were to get rid of this by unpinning it, no, unpin, Brian, there you go. We'll give it a second, right? We're in, this is another copy of Windows 8.
Right.
But this is my test copy. It has all the things you expect, except you can't run virtualization inside here, which means there's no inception thing of a VM inside a VM inside a VM thing.
Okay.
And where that affects developers.
So that means that you can't run the phone tool, the phone emulator, the iPhone emulator, the Windows Phone emulator, any other emulators you might want to run.
Right. Well, it depends on what they are. The Windows Phone 8 SDK's emulator specifically uses Hyper-V, so that's why it's a no-no. The iOS emulator doesn't. I don't think you can't officially use it on here. It will technically be compatible, but you can't through licensing.
Can you create a Windows 8 app and run it in the simulator in a VM?
The simulator works fine.
Okay,
absolutely.
Cool.
So the simulator's no problem. The basic thing is if they use the hardware system virtualization right now, the way it works. Hyper-V doesn't. There's only one that can be own the hypervisor. Talk to the low level hardware. That said, there are products on the internet will say, "Oh, we can do a VM inside a VM, or you can run this virtualization stack inside it." Yeah, be very careful. You always look at it's experimental, and whenever you try it, it's actually dog slow and pretty horrible performance. It's not something that I would use day to day. It's more of a cute experiment today.
Okay.
Once again, 5 years, it may work great.
So because you chose wired as the connectivity option, this machine is acting as if it is a machine on the network.
Yep, we go to IP config.
So are you, okay, are you on the Microsoft CorpNet? You can go to Bing.
Yes, I am. In fact, okay. We see that little thing here.
Got it. Okay.
Shows that it's the internal. Yeah, I'm on CorpNet.
So you can get to shared drives, the whole shebang. You can get to internal sites.
Yeah, whatever I have rights to on this network. Exactly.
Right.
In fact, what I can do, if I were to go to Explorer here, let's see if we can ping my host drive. Now, I'm on a larger network. There we go. It can see.
Okay.
So in theory, now the next magic part, net use my D drive. So we'll call it, in this virtual machine, we'll just call it X, Thor 8E, D dollar sign. And I'm going to tell it I'll put my password in so people can't see it. This is my real machine. And I'll use my local administrator account as a way to get to this special share. And now, I just want to point out that is the same ISO folder we saw on the network. So it's just like a regular machine.
Okay.
Which also means if you can't get to it on from another machine, you can't get to it from here. There's not a lot of magic. Like I said, the internal network gives you some magic. But in general, the number one rule is think about how you get to things normally.
So this would give you the ability. This is back when I was doing this and wasn't as good at it as you are. One of the issues that I always had was mail, right? So I say, well, I need to spend all day in a Windows 7 machine, and I'm just going to spend all day developing a Windows 7 or testing this in Windows 7, and I want maximum performance. I'm just going to boot into that And I want to be, and to read mail, I don't want to necessarily swap out, go back to my main machine, swap back in. So I want to install Office, connect to my server, and then point to all of my PSTs, which are all on my D drive.
Yep.
So I could do that here, and I could just for that instant, for that VM, say the PSTs are in X, or I could still call it D. Doesn't matter what
if
I
don't have D. If I don't have D used, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that would absolutely work.
Cool.
Once again, with Outlook, depending on what you're doing, you have OSTs, and so you can just it will just act like another machine on the network, as if your desktop at work versus your laptop.
Right.
But in the case of when it's shared data files, absolutely, it would just be like it's a network resource.
Awesome.
The only thing you have is contention, right? You want to run your host Outlook talking to the same PST, and Outlook in here talking to the same PST because Outlook's not designed to do that.
Right. 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 Sure. Awesome.
Yep. And in this copy of Visual Studio. I have the ability to go to things like version control. If I can get to the network, I can do it, right? So I can come over here and connect to Team Foundation server, go to servers, add. We have one that we do for the USMNO. We connect. It's going to prompt me for who I am, right? I'll log in. That's my address in case you want to email me questions. Tell me you saw me on Robert's show, and we'll put my password, give it a second.
And you are connected.
Connected. I can go over here, go to projects, and just for giggles, we'll go to source control, and you'll see that sure enough, right, I can get to my branches and get to our code. Just
awesome.
Just like regular networks. So it is a machine. Yeah.
So this is the solution to the problem. You just create as many VMs as you need. You want to test out a new version of the operating system. You create a VM and you install that, and then it's just sitting there. If you decide you're done with it, you delete it.
Yep.
A new version comes out, you just toss that one, you create a new one. You can take the snapshot, so you can start with a clean image. So, you've got a clean image, and you can decide based on disk space how many you need. I've got a clean image of Windows 8, I've got a clean image of Windows 8 with Office 2010, a clean image with Office 2013, whatever, with Visual Studio 2010, 2012. I mean, this is also an issue. Sometimes I need to be in 2010, sometimes I need to be in 2012. Do I really want them on the same machine? What if I had to go back and do something in 2008?
Yes, right? Totally. This thing is, the team, let's be honest, has done an amazing job of allowing you to have all these versions installed side by side.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of .NET 4 to 4.5, right? There's some changes in the way it works in 2012. If you want to make sure you're 100% not going to cause any incompatibilities, or you just want to keep some isolation, and you only need, say, 2010 once a month.
Right.
Why do you want to pollute your main hard drive with having to do
it's,
that?
It's the isolation that would be the reason to do it, because, you know, I created a project, several years ago in 2008. You know, let's say it was a Visto solution, Visual Studio Tools for Office, created with 2008, working with 2003?
Office 2007.
2007, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because 2010 we got synchronized, 2010 Visual Studio with 2010
okay.
Office.
So it's Visual Studio 2008 running on 2007.
Yep.
Then I should create a virtual machine with that environment.
Absolutely.
And just leave it, right? Sure, do patching, right? Do the updates.
Oh, yeah, do Windows
as they become available, of course. But now that is the configuration as of the time you built it. That's the configuration as of the time you're going to go back to build it. And that's just, goodness, all it cost you was a little time to set up in hard disk. But as we said, hard disk is cheap.
And that's a really good point. I mean, Office is a prime example. Office will do some side-by-side, but Outlook, for example, only one active copy.
Right.
So now you can keep these things completely isolated, test them. There's no compatibility issues. You can even do operating system levels. Like in the day, maybe you want to do 2010 on Windows 7 with Office 2010, right? Those three together, because that's what your customers are using. Mm-hmm. You can be very compatible to them and feel more confident that you're not going to get bug reports back because, oh, I didn't test it on there, or I had a new version of this.
Right. So, in the old days weren't that long ago, we would do this essentially at the machine level. So when you turned on the machine, you know, you'd go into the boot manager, yep. And when you turned on the machine, it would ask you, which VHD do you want? We don't need to do that anymore. Is that correct?
No.
Is there any reason ever to do that?
Yeah, I actually do it a lot. And the reason is number one, backups. So there are different ways to back up your machine, okay? There's all sorts of software and technology. But the nice thing is because I can do a boot to VHD, and by the way, to be clear, there's boot managers that actually lay down the Windows on the native hard drive, but you can't get them off easily. I can actually boot my operating system into a VHD, which would be another show for sure because there's a whole mess of things to talk about there. But the point is I can get that VHD and use it and just back up the whole thing. So I boot to another copy,
right.
Copied out. So there's backups I use it for. The other thing is something like the Windows Phone tools. I can't run those in a VM, but okay. Maybe there's a pre-release that I don't want to put on my main machine. So it's a way to gain that isolation at the hardware level, actually do it at the boot level.
And is the process for doing that the same as it's been?
No. It's a wee bit different. There's unfortunately
it's different than it was like a year ago or 2 years ago.
No, and it's the same as it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. All right. Sorry.
So there's a very good blog post that there are a number of blog posts, but there's one that I used in particular. I'll add a link to that in the description for the show.
Yeah, there's a couple
how to do that. And if you want to send me what you think is the best one, I'll put that up there too.
Yeah, there's a couple of good ones out there that I know about. Two different ones, in fact, and they're both by Microsoft people that I think are probably the better. They're written well.
Yeah.
And they're easy to follow, and so we'll put those on the links. And then I even talked about it at Tech Ed last year. So if you search on Channel 9 for me, you can watch my talks. And there's some more geeky details in there.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah, boot to VHD is another extension of the virtualization family.
Right. So that's something you could use as the good scenario is when you need to use phone emulators and won't run in Hyper-V.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. What I do on my machine is occasionally I need server. With Windows 8, I don't use server like I used to, but occasionally I do. So I can switch between server, and server is just stored as a VHD.
But you could create a VM from Windows 8 that runs server, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's in fact what we were starting to do.
And I have one actually in my office. So here's as we talk about tips and tricks, here's a question. So I have a Windows 8 machine in my office running server.
Okay.
Because I needed a certificate server.
Okay.
It works great. But then every, on a regular basis, Windows 8 says, going to restart to install updates. And it gives me a warning, right? We'll go in 2 days, and then in a day, we'll restart today. And then it ultimately does. Does that virtual machine doesn't automatically restart? Is there a way to configure it to?
Sure. It's just a Windows machine. You can do all sorts of things to make it restart.
Show me one of them.
Well, what do you mean?
The virtual machine. So I've got Windows 8 running.
Yep.
Hyper-V is running. I got a virtual machine running.
Yep.
The machine restarts.
The host machine.
The host machine restarts.
And you want that VM to automatically restart
itself. I do, actually.
Great. Yep, that's easy. Okay.
Because then I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
I don't have to be monitoring that machine.
Right down here, automatic restart option.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, right there.
Cool.
I'm sorry, I had to make sure I was in the right context what you wanted
Always start this virtual machine automatically.
Yep.
That's what I want. Or start if it was running when, okay.
Yeah, you have flexibility there.
That's what I want.
So here's always, only if it was running previously,
which
sometimes, you know, maybe you don't want it to.
And what's the default? Is that?
That's the default.
Oh, so by default, maybe, okay. Anyway, I'll look there. Cool.
Yeah, that is definitely your friend, if that's what you want. Exactly. So what I did, we were talking, so if they didn't see it, I just went in and renamed the XP one because we're going to make a server 2012.
Right.
And we're going to change that drive one more time. We're going to get rid of the ISO, and we're going to change it and point to that VHDX that I copied, which happens to be the server 2012 eval that I got from Microsoft's site. And actually, let's give it just a little more RAM. It'll run in that just fine. So let's start it up. And this one, because this is actually what happens when you start from a sysprep machine. Microsoft sysprepped it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Windows is installed and the default configuration is done. So it's going to come up. And in a second, right, I'm going to go through, accept the license agreement, and I'll get to put a password for the administrator.
Yep.
And this machine will be ready to go. So if we give it a second, and you'll see that it's getting devices ready. And what it's done is looking and saying, I'm a VM, so there's not much I have to do. They've done a lot of work on the modern operating systems, Windows 8 and 2012, to know that they're running inside Hyper-V, so it just comes optimized out of the box to give you that great experience. And if we come up here, almost there. And I feel the glow of the window. And there we go.
Cool.
Accept. Come down here. Yep, this all matches me, but you can change that for those of you non-English, non-US people. Put a password. Finish. And
voila.
That's ready to go.
With an eval version, 120 day, 90 day?
This actually has 180 days.
180 days. Cool.
And I am now in the out-of-box experience as if I had gone through, but I didn't have to mount the ISO. I didn't have to do that. It's ready to go. And what it'll do is it'll say in there in a second that this is evaluation.
And the cool thing about that is you already have your clean version, which is that file you downloaded.
Yep.
So you download that, store it somewhere, and now you make any changes you need to this VHDX, take snapshots if you need to. Very, very cool.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, this is even internal in Microsoft for testing. It is recommended to use evals. We don't need to activate them. You're just going to use them temporarily. They're not for line of business. They're not your day-to-day machine, but you want to test, and that's, you know, they are time-bound for that very reason. But that's the thing. You use them, throw them away.
Yeah,
and this is great for trying the quarterly updates. In fact, I'll do a lot of times here when I don't need to do something Windows 8 specific. I just want to run the IDE and play with it.
Mm-hmm.
Pop it on there. By the way, there is evaluation version of Windows 8.
Yep.
The last time I looked, there wasn't a VHDX. There is an ISO. You download it, you build it, and just save it off.
Right.
The only difference is it's only 90 days.
Okay.
But that's about the other difference. So there you go. I have a VM ready to go. Here's what's cool, by the way, too. Check this out. We'll come over here. And once again, we don't do this with real production machines. Okay. Let's do that. Save it. Now, I'm going to come over here. And you can come over here and see that the machine, notice I don't have any snapshots.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice snapshot it, right?
Right.
I'm going to delete the file. Not even going to go to the trash can, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come over here. Apply.
Yeah, cool.
So you can do it running. Don't recommend you do that in most cases, but for little tests and stuff, you don't even have to shut down the machine. You're just trying to try a couple permutations.
Mm-hmm.
It's your test VM. Great. On the other hand, you've installed a bunch of software, definitely shut down and do the snapshots like you saw in my other version.
Right. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. So this is absolutely something that I highly recommend you do. If you've done it in the past, it's This is way easier, way better. So again, if you're going to play with the new stuff, download CTPs, download release previews, if you're going to be running on Windows 8 and you need to go back to Windows 7 or XP, or if you've got old projects in that environment, set up that environment as a VHD, keep it, buy cheap hardware, buy a lot of it, store a lot of them. Think about a naming scheme and an organization scheme, whether it's through the name of the file or, you know, a logbook or something. Yeah, don't get confused. Keep very good records and notes as to what the difference is between them. Play around with that. And this solves a lot of problems.
On that note, I wanted to say on the notes, you can even keep notes in here. What I like to do is two things. You can put little notes in here about the virtual machine.
Okay.
And this is nice so you can remember just what's in there, because sometimes you don't come back for a couple of weeks. The other thing is,
throw
a README file in the directory. Naming conventions I often will do the day I backed it up. I'll even say the purpose. You know, I use fairly long directory names to back up the VHD. So I go, why did I do this? The other thing is it going to be expired? Is it not even worth my time keeping?
Right.
And then you can purge them off your hard drive.
And it also, you know, we install software over and we install operating systems over and over and over again. And there's a standard list of things that you always need to do. And I write it down on a piece of paper, and then 6 months later, I can't find it.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, things like start, you know, install IIS, install ASP.NET, install SQL Server, can IIS talk to SQL Server, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This gives you not only another great place to write those steps down, but then think about the things that you want your clean image to have.
Your base.
This is a clean image out of the box without any of that stuff set up. Okay, fine. This is a clean image set up so that I am ready to file new project. What is everything I need to do before I file new project? Create a VM of that, save it.
I cannot agree more. That's what you see there. I see those eval versions with some base additional changes. I put down some of the sysinternal tools that I want to have, lightweight things.
Right.
I changed some of the settings that really bothered me about, I want the ribbon to show up. I want file extensions to show up. That's one of the first things I go and change because I like it. And it just saves me time when I go into that machine. It's ready to go.
So from a licensing perspective, is your license that you can install, let's say you've got a license to install on a single machine. Is that a single physical machine, or is each virtual machine treated like a machine?
Oh, that gets very, very complicated.
Does it?
Yes.
That I was afraid of.
Yeah, I really want to be careful. So let's just stick to developers. The best thing to be completely licensed is to use MSDN. Okay? Your MSDN license covers you for as many necessary virtual machines that you want to create from the Windows software provided with your MSDN subscription. So if you have Windows 7 with your MSDN license, and don't confuse licensing with activation, okay, but your license to create them as you need them for dev and test.
Okay, sorry.
Production gets very messy and very complicated.
No. Let's stick to dev and test.
For dev and test, you need...
That's what we're talking about here today. We're not talking about using VMs in production. That would be a different topic.
Good, okay, great.
not for this show. This is for dev and test. So here's another scenario. I've got Windows 8, and then I create 20 Windows 8 VMs.
Okay. Where did you get the Windows 8 from?
Where did I get it from?
Mm-hmm.
I bought it. Let's say I bought it. I bought Windows 8 Pro.
You went and bought one copy.
One copy.
Okay. Then you're only, if you don't have MSDN, and you're not using the ones from Microsoft, the eval versions, then if I recall correctly, and licensing can correct me, and always, I'm not a lawyer, read the ULA. But I believe you're entitled to one virtualized copy.
Okay, so now I've got MSDN. So I got my Windows 8 from MSDN.
Yep.
I'm allowed to install it on...
As many.
Okay, so now I have 20 VMs.
Yep.
And because I can't fire up the machine without, you know, I can't code for more than half an hour without going and playing Angry Birds Star Wars Edition. But I'm allowed to install that on five devices.
Yep.
So when I I'm going to download it again from the store, and it's going to count that. The store doesn't care. You're on a physical machine. You're on a virtual machine. Doesn't matter. It's a machine. You've downloaded it. It's going to treat it as a separate
device.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the same thing with Office and everything else.
Yep.
And once again, you know, the expectation is you understand the licensing. What I'm being clear about is
I want to raise the issue. We're not here to tell people what the license agreements are.
Exactly.
But we've now raised the issue. So no, you can't just say, well, I'm only running on one machine, because you're not.
No.
These machines are for the purposes of licensing, in all likelihood, treated as another machine. Doesn't matter if it's a VM on this or a separate physical box.
Right. And that would go in the context of, could I build a virtual machine and give it to you? Let's say you and I worked together, like we did at one point, in a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Legally, I can. If we are in under the same, we all have MSDN, that is considered okay. From that perspective, the company has licenses and things like that. On the other hand, I have MSDN, you do not.
Right.
That would be, it's like, on one hand, I can give you my physical machine, but I have to give you the entire device. Virtual machines don't work that way. You cannot just give someone your virtual machine.
Right.
And the activation anti-piracy will do things to try and prevent some of that, and some of these you have to be aware of. But the license for MSDN is all about, for dev and test, that's why they're giving you there. You build what you need,
mm-hmm.
use appropriate for your use, and that's fine.
So another interesting question, and I don't know the answer to this, I might need to find out, is so if I want to build a Windows Store app on one machine and run it on another, mm-hmm. I can just go get a developer license and then I can install the AppX.
Yep.
To get a developer license, all I need is a Microsoft account and an internet connection.
Yep.
I wonder is there a limit to the number of machines I can install my developer license on?
I have not run into an issue.
I don't know. Might have to figure that out.
I have not had any trouble.
Might...
I install mine in VMs as necessary and renews every 30 days. That's the other thing to remember.
Right, right. But you haven't run into an issue yet with the number. Okay.
No. I can tell you I've done at least 10.
Okay, good. All right, awesome.
So the last thing I just want to point out is, you know, I'm a bit of a hardware pig and I had a lot of RAM here. You don't have to have as much as I did, but I will say, the two things that really affect your enjoyment of virtual machines will be the quality of your hardware in two areas. One is RAM. You need to have a certain amount. You have to have enough. Okay, you can't starve the host and expect to run well. It's not magic. The second thing is disk performance. For the primary drive, the drive that you're running off on a regular basis, I cannot tout the beauty and benefits of SSDs with appropriate backups,
mm-hmm.
which means that you will not get the speed you saw me here. Well, Brian did it in a couple seconds. Well, if you're doing it off an old typical laptop drive that's 5,400 RPMs, it's going to take a lot longer to boot up and do everything. SSDs now, we've cracked the dollar per gigabyte barrier. Name brands, Intel, OCZ, mm-hmm. Crucial, everybody has their opinion. They have failure rates, et cetera. That's why we have backups. Use a mechanical drive for backups, SSD for running the VMs, and you will have a much, much happier experience.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad we finally did. It only took a year.
This is awesome. Hope you guys enjoyed that, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.